Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heard on the Street, Street Fights podcast, where we uncover the stories behind the companies and, more importantly, the people that constitute this sector of media and advertising that we all call local. So where are they from? What makes them tick? What business and life lessons can we draw from that? So I'm Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight, and our guest today is Matthew Bibaud-Lubeck, VP of Strategic Services for Amperity, which is innovating in the area of customer data management for brands. So we talked to Matthew from our studio in San Francisco about that journey and what we can all take away from it. So here's our discussion with Matthew. So Matthew, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Sure. So we got a lot to talk about, including diving deeper into everything I just mentioned. But first, let's start at the present. So tell us a little bit about yourself and Amperity for those unfamiliar.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Vice President of Strategic Services at Amperity, which I'll take you through what we do a little bit more. We're about a two-year-old startup based out of Seattle that's playing in the customer identity and customer data platform space. We were purpose-built for the sole mission of helping brands to unify their customer data and to be able to make use of that data across their organization.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, definitely a lot to unpack there. And we're gonna circle back to the ins and outs of what you're doing and the strategic implications for our audience. But as we like to do on the show, we're going to hit the rewind button and talk about you and kind of how you got into this. So let's start at the beginning. Like, characterize for us the beginning of your career and kind of the path that got you into the world of digital media and marketing.
Yeah, sure. So it's funny, but I actually would say that the beginning of the story starts with me building airports out of building blocks when I was about 6 years old. So I've always had this sort of obsession for travel and for airlines. And there's a bunch of reasons for that are maybe less relevant for today. But if you fast forward to college, I went to Cornell, which has an amazing hospitality school. And I was in an airline marketing class, and sort of, you know, now we're 20 years later. And still my passion for airlines hasn't died. And I was obsessed with trying to make my first job out of college be working for an airline. An airline professor, her name is Mary Tabaki, kind of built my career. She connected me to some of the folks at Virgin Atlantic and helped me to land my first job in loyalty marketing. And the truth was, I wasn't looking for something specifically in direct marketing or data-driven marketing or digital. I really just wanted to work for an amazing company, and Virgin Atlantic was one of the airlines, especially back kind of circa 2000, that was really shaking up the industry as an underdog and had this incredible brand equity. And so from the outside in, just seemed like an incredible place to be able to spend time and learn my way into the airline industry. And so that was really my objective when I got started. And then what you find when you get into an airline is that such an incredible percent of airlines' total business is driven off of data and loyalty. They were some of the earliest adopters of the notion of the modern loyalty program, and some of the earliest to recognize the importance of driving strategy and revenue off of a relationship with their existing customers. And so I was in the heart of the loyalty marketing team, and what I was doing is helping them to execute loyalty campaigns to customers. And some of that was direct marketing, and some of that was more in person and high touch. But if you think about the day-to-day job that you're doing working on loyalty marketing, you're querying lists out of sort of very old versions at that time of business objects. And you're helping to get those lists over to places like email service providers. And you're working with a creative agency on various content versions for members. And you're creating some sort of crude versions of personalization and trying to be relevant to customers. And then you're measuring the impact of that. And then you're sort of following that cycle again and again on optimization. And so I think without being able to even identify it, all of a sudden I was sort of working across the foundation of what data-driven marketing was and sort of executing that.
Yeah, a lot of threads there that I can see to like where you are today. But before we get into that, you know, your kind of anecdote of like playing with blocks and building airports as a child, that reminds me, wasn't there a Virgin commercial like a few years ago that depicted Richard Branson like as a child doing all these things that ended up like influencing his like empire? Like he was delivering papers and he was like recording things and like, you know, all these it was an interesting commercial that it was like, you know, the young Richard Branson.
Oh my gosh, there totally was, and he's such an inspirational he's such an inspirational entrepreneur.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, a lot of people don't know the Virgin Atlantic story, but it was built off of cash that came from bootleg record sales by illegally importing records from mainland Europe into the UK. Huh. I mean, the guy is pretty audacious. And if there's one thing that I think, I learned from him that, you know, I'm just lucky to have started my career at Virgin Atlantic. It's that there's nothing more important than a brand, and brands that are boring are really hard to break through and build sort of longitudinally. And he really made me a believer that, you know, you can layer any tactic, channel, buzzword you want in, but if you don't have a strong brand, it's really hard to get value out of that.
Yeah. And that's a great backstory. We learn all kinds of new things on this podcast. So as really like a lead in to kind of transitioning over to talk about Imperity, you know, one of the things that we like to talk about in this show is like what I like to call cross training. So like what different executives do throughout their career. And sometimes that is deliberate. Sometimes it's serendipitous to really kind of like create this mosaic of skills, of experience, of perspective. So a lot of the things you just mentioned, like loyalty program, other things, I can see kind of tie together to, you know, what some of the things that Imperity is doing around, you know, customer data management. But before we go into that, like how do you characterize that like overall mix of skills for you in that like cross training that you've gained and where that leaves you now as like an asset to the company?
Yeah, totally. So, it's funny because after Virgin, I went to work in the beauty industry for about 10 years. And so I was at MAC Cosmetics, which is the largest luxury makeup brand as part of the Estee Lauder companies. And then later went over to spend about 8 years over in L'Oreal Group. And again, you know, the funny thing about the story of going to MAC Cosmetics is it was so formative in sort of some of the skill sets that I needed to acquire to get to where I am now. But the truth, again, you know, like a lot of job moves early in your career is I was commuting 2 hours a day to Connecticut, and MAC was in Soho in a really cool warehouse and a 20-minute walk from working a cool brand. And I thought, okay, cool, I'll go do what I assume is going to be somewhat similar, from Virgin at a new company with a lot in common in a smaller commute. And what I didn't expect that was kind of incredible is the Estee Lauder companies were really pioneers in looking at data and seeing it as a competitive advantage. And they had me very quickly do so much more than just direct marketing in building out the way that they wanted to use data. And so all of a sudden I found myself in rooms helping to bring data to the table in pricing strategy, product development strategy, store merchandising strategy. And I began to understand how you can begin to transform a business that in an industry that's frankly very product centric and very product category centric, you can bring customer centricity to the heart of conversations that had never had data at the table before. And so all of a sudden without realizing it, I'd become someone that had just worked on the sort of at tactical level execution that needed to happen to transform a brand from being pretty product centric to being much more consumer centric.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did at L'Oreal twice. So at L'Oreal, very different experiences. So went from being in a single brand to being in a corporate environment. I think you acquire really different skill sets and need to leverage different muscles in that environment because you've got to be able to handle the stakeholder management of working across portfolios and, you know, a complex matrix of different leaders that all have their own agendas and missions and figure out a way to bring enough value to them that you can build out sort of a corporate capability with traction. Because in that case, what we were doing there was building out the capabilities that were needed to harness the power of data across both direct-to-consumer programmatic media and then a modern measurement stack, but we were building those capabilities on behalf of 30 brands trying to help the brands along on the journey to understand how to use that. And at the same time, with respect to the brands and their equity, we never wanted to take over their ability to tell their stories direct to their consumers. And so we were staffing teams within the brands that could leverage these capabilities and who would tell the story from the brand point of view out to their consumer and own that relationship. And so, you know, the stakeholder management skills just get magnified so intensely in an environment like that to be successful. You know, and I think that the last thing that I think is super hard in data-driven marketing and frankly in digital marketing too, there's just so much that's possible and no sort of one clear path or right way to prioritize. And so you've got to figure out a way to learn into what strategies really work. I'm a big believer in test and learn. And I'm a big believer that once you find something that works, even if it feels simplistic, if you can scale that, that it's that it can drive incredible value for a business. And so I think that I've got a kind of gut feel that I finally developed around on the strategy side of data, where to go to hunt for value and which, how to figure out a consumer journey and then figure out which parts of it to spend time on to deliver value and change the customer experience. And that takes a whole bunch of failures to get the gut of what all the things that may not work or pan out.
And you know, it's, you know, once you start measuring things, there's data overload. And one kind of motto I always like from the kind of data and analysis world is, you know, it's not just about data, it's about insights. And to your point about there's so much of it, so kind of having that gut feel for kind of where to zero in, where it's strategically relevant. So we're actually going to pause there for a commercial break. When we come back, more from Matthew. Hi, everyone. This is Mike Bolin, lead analyst with Street Fight, and I'd like to talk to you today about Street Fight in 2019. So we've got lots of good things cooking and lots of opportunities for you to get involved. So we're looking for guests on this podcast. We're looking for editorial contributions from thought leaders. We're looking for inspiring speakers at our events. And all of that really comes together in the rich mosaic that you've come to know as Street Fight's thought leadership in location-based media and advertising and commerce and innovation. And part of that formula are lots of opportunities to sponsor content and have your brand associated with that thought leadership. So stay tuned for lots more information and announcements for those rollouts, and reach out to us if you have any questions or want your voice heard in that chorus of narratives, including this podcast and messages like this one. So you can email me at michael@streetfightmag.com for more, and we're looking forward to working with you in 2019. So we're back. My guest is Matthew Bibou-Lubeck. So Matthew, before the break, we were talking about your background, and that kind of brings us to the present. So I want to drill down a little bit more on Imperity, especially kind of for those unfamiliar, kind of characterize the company on really two levels. One, like I like to phrase this usually as the what and the why. So the what is it exactly that you're offering in terms of the product set, the offerings, kind of where they begin and end, and then the why, you know, what are the pain points and the market need that you guys are addressing?
Yeah, absolutely. So we very simplistically, we bring together all of a brand's customer data, we unify it, and we get that data back to the brand so that the brand is able to leverage that across their organization. It sounds so simple. Right. And if you think, you know, go rewind sort of 2 years ago when we were in the processes of ideating and building out the product, we'd spoken to 50 plus of some of the largest, most loved brands across the market and found that even though it sounds so simple just to have your data and be able to leverage it, no one really had solved this problem of the single view of their consumer. And they'd made major investments to try to get to this place, right? So people had invested in agencies and various digital marketing platforms and commerce platforms, and all of them sort of talk about the need for customer data because they need it to be able to deliver a certain experience to a customer, but no one was holistically, sort of in a very channel agnostic way, just solving for helping a brand to bring together all of their data and doing it sort of at scale, efficiently and affordably. And so we set out to create a solution to solve the problem. And what we really believed was that there were tons of players out there that were trying to help with slightly better personalization of, let's say, a display banner or visualization of data. And so to add value, we really wanted to tackle the heart of the identity problem.
Yep.
And in 2017, you know, the two things that we were able to leverage that just hadn't existed before that kind of explain why brands had struggled with this. One is cloud computing got quite a bit cheaper at scale. And machine learning began to really mature. And no one had pointed machine learning at the identity problem. Everyone was pointing machine learning at the personalization problem. Like, what should I say to my customer? But not to resolve a human being's identity before that point so that you know who you're talking to. And so the cloud compute solution meant that we could try to solve the problem at scale and do it in a more affordable way. And then we took data science and said, no, we're going to point data science at the problem of identity. And sort of want to try to accomplish two things, which is what we're doing. One is let's make the job of identity resolution faster and more accurate. And second, let's make the job of the teams who do this at brands easier. And if you look at sort of the outcomes now of where we are with some of the brands that we're working with, you know, we're seeing magnitudes of 10 to 30% improvement on identity from what they may have been doing before. And that comes in kind of two flavors. One is just helping them with algorithms that we bring to their table that they wouldn't have had in the past. Mm. And the second is that because we're helping them to efficiently get access to all of their data, we're often getting access to data they've never brought together. Hmm. And so we're helping them create unique reach of new audiences that they were never able to get to in the past. And you know, 18 months in, you know, it's kind of humbling actually, but we've got now a roster of customers that range across industries from you know, big airlines like Alaska Airlines. We work with Starbucks and Gap and Wynn Casinos and Kendra Scott, and now a sports team with the Seattle Sounders. And
yeah, absolutely. So that's great. So from the like what and why, I want to dig a little bit deeper into the how. I think you there were some very interesting points you noted, kind of some of the vertical breakdowns in your client base and all that. But before we go there, sticking still with the what, I want to define one more thing. So we've talked a few times about customer data management, and I think you've explained it well. One question to go a little bit deeper on that, though, is kind of where that sits in the value chain, because we often talk about data that informs and assists marketing in everything from like ad targeting to attribution and being able to measure the effectiveness of different campaigns. And then there's also data that informs how you serve your existing customers through messaging, through retention, through service. You know, where does kind of customer data management live as a science? Is it all of the above? Is it, you know, how does that map?
Yeah, so it's a prerequisite to all of the above.
Got it.
So that's how we see it. So we think about the value chain in a couple of spaces. So first, you need to be able to get all of your data in one place. And so there's this sort of ingestion process. And one of the ways that we've made life a lot easier for brands is that we require them to do no transformation of their data in order for us to take their data in. So that's a huge change from before. You would have these teams that were doing what's called ETL that were often a major part of the cost and timeline of a big data project. So you have the ingest part of it. We take that off of a brand's hands. You have the identity part of it. That's the core of our IP, is around identity. And then there's a few layers that follow that. So layers that follow that, the way that we see it, is a decisioning layer where you start to extract insights out of the data. And we both act in that space, but we also partner depending on what the brand's capabilities are with some of our partners like Castora, for example, or for visualization with Tableau or Power BI. And then you have the orchestration layer, which is where journeys get built, campaigns get executed, and there's a whole bunch of technologies out there that we integrate into. But again, there's, you know, probably, you know, 1,000 companies out there that in various ways help you do that orchestration. And we just want to get great data into those tools so that marketers can do a better job of focusing on building new customer experiences and delivering them, and focus less on just munging the data and getting it there. And they want to make sure that if they deliver an experience to a customer, that it's going to the right person. And so you need really good, accurate data to do that.
Yeah. And that's absolutely a common pain point out there that I'm sure you guys see a lot is, you know, the aggregation of siloed data sets, of legacy data sets. So I think that's a great pain point you guys are solving. So along those lines, in terms of pain points, it seems that this is well-timed in terms of an overall trend we're seeing where a lot of brands are taking their marketing in-house to greater degrees as opposed to a traditional agency approach. So it seems that as that's happening, they're going to need better tools like Amperity to pull that off. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's absolutely right. So our timing is right. I think that the marketplace is matured enough now. I think there's enough brands that have cobbled their way into, even if the back end is less scalable, proving that personalization works, that brands have no choice now but to make the shift into becoming more customer-centric, and they need to use data. And so the challenge is that they're all bumping against the problem that they've got, which is that they may have invested in those last-mile tools like a better personalization engine or a new email platform, but often they've got this data problem.
Absolutely. So I'm also wondering to characterize the company and its service, kind of where it begins and ends in terms of, you know, it seems like there's obviously a software component and also a high touch component in terms of these client relationships. So where do you kind of sit on that sliding scale? Because they're obviously kind of you know, economic benefits to things like software and SaaS models. There's also advantages to long-term relationship building and kind of high-touch client, kind of more consulting kind of relationships. So where do you kind of fit on that spectrum?
Totally. So this question is music to my ears because I'm a big believer that lighting up, and so is Imperity, that lighting up a single view of the customer is super important and absolutely not the end of the journey of a data transformation at an organization. So there's sort of two ways to look at this. So the first is that we're obsessed with our customer success and we want them to get great value out of this and help them on their journey. And that's going to mean different things to different customers. Certainly there are sort of SaaS metrics where, you know, for a healthy business, you want to have some parameters where, you know, you're not exceeding sort of the 15-20% of total revenue from services. Yep. And we are a healthy SaaS business. So we look at that, but, you know, outside of that, we have different packages for customers, designed to help them along on the journey in the way that they need it. So some customers come in, they have a great vision, they know exactly what they need, and we serve as a technology to them, and we may help them more on the data and IT side. So if they want to do planning around what the right stack should be for them, then that's a way that we can work with them sort of beyond just plugging and playing the software. With other businesses, we'll come in and we'll help them to work on their data strategy, and we'll help them with use case road mapping and to do some consumer journey mapping. And sometimes we'll do a la carte analytics and we'll build predictive models on their behalf as well. So it, you know, it really depends. It all starts from, you know, some consistencies. Everyone gets a customer success team that's dedicated to them. We're pretty playbooked about how we implement. So, mm-hmm. you know, the basics of getting up and running with that single view of the customer, you know, that's pretty locked and loaded.
Absolutely. So sticking with like how you're serving clients, you mentioned kind of a broad range of verticals you're serving. I mean, it's like everything from casinos to airlines. So, you know, are there any like common threads in those types of businesses and verticals you're serving in terms of how they map to what you're offering? Or does it really just speak to the fact that you can have that versatility across the board? And then I guess as a corollary to that question, you know, where are there any areas or vertical expansion where you're looking to go next that you think is underserved that you can talk about?
Sure. So, you know, look, from a software perspective, it's actually pretty incredible how consistently we're able to serve customers across verticals. Yep. And we're not seeing such intense nuance. And part of the reason for that is that the software was designed in a way that's pretty agnostic to the technology. So we were designed in a way that we don't need traditional connectors to be built from specific tools. So an airline might use Sabre and have data coming in from the OTAs like Expedia and Priceline Group, whereas a retailer maybe is working with e-commerce platforms like Demandware and has a POS system that needs to be ingested into Imperity. And the thing is, because we're a connectorless and we're a transformationless sort of no ETL ingest piece of software, from a software perspective, it's pretty easy for us to say that we're industry agnostic. We've built compliance level, compliance is a big thing that we talk about all the time is, you know, are we able to handle the sort of like best and most bulletproof types of data privacy requirements that you can get from financial services and from pharma, and we're in conversations and actively in a pilot right now with one of the world's largest pharma companies, and also beginning to spin up some work in financial services. But on the strategy side is where there's some differences. The way an airline thinks and wants to use data, the way that a retailer wants to focus on data, you know, it all comes back to trying to understand their consumer journeys, but those journeys are pretty different. Mm. The way that businesses think about revenue and business lines is pretty different. And so we staff for that. So we have people from financial services, the head of guest services and strategy from Alaska Airlines has now come to lead our account management team and is able to bring incredible value to our hospitality vertical. Certainly, we have a couple of us that come from the retail and CPG space. So we have someone from the sports area as well that's just joined us as well to help us with the sports and entertainment vertical. So we're proud of what the software can do, and then we believe that we still need to have people that have lived and breathed in these industries to help connect the dots.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and so many questions based on that. But first, we're going to pause for another commercial break. When we come back, more from Matthew. Hi, everyone. This is Mike Bolin, lead analyst with Street Fight, and I'd like to talk to you today about Street Fight in 2019. So we've got lots of good things cooking and lots of opportunities for you to get involved. So we're looking for guests on this podcast. We're looking for editorial contributions from thought leaders. We're looking for inspiring speakers at our events. And all of that really comes together in the rich mosaic that you've come to know as Street Fight's thought leadership in location-based media and advertising and commerce and innovation. And part of that formula are lots of opportunities to sponsor content and have your brand associated with that thought leadership. So stay tuned for lots more information and announcements for those rollouts, and reach out to us if you have any questions or want your voice heard in that chorus of narratives, including this podcast and messages like this one. So you can email me at michael@streetfightmag.com for more, and we're looking forward to working with you in 2019. So we're back. My guest is Matthew Bibou Lubeck. So Matthew, when we were before the break, we were talking about a lot of the different kind of strategies and tactics and kind of client paradigms, client service paradigms that you guys are exercising. So going a little bit deeper on, you know, some of the differentiators for Imperity. One core focus of Street Fight is location, location targeting, location data. That's not something you guys specialize in, but as a CDP, of course, like location is a component. As we're all mobile, as we're all, you know, quote unquote omni-channel, it's, location, of course, comes into profiling because kind of all of us as consumers. So I guess what the question is, what degree does location come into play? And how does that kind of map to the different ways you're serving the different brands we've talked about, whether it be an airline or a casino or retail or CPG? So how big is kind of location coming into play there?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's funny because when you say location, it's like hard to talk about location without at least talking about privacy and
totally
data safety. And then we can tell you how we're using it.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is the data space is so ripe right now with you know, room for both the creepy factor and then I think some really illicit behavior. I think the whole market's woken up to the way that, you know, Facebook obviously has treated customer data in ways that weren't, you know, as respectful of their user base as everyone had imagined. And we're really proud of what we're doing right now, which is a very consent-based, we're oriented towards a very consent-based approach towards customer data. So what that means is that we're not a network effect player. We don't bring customers' data into Imperity, bump it up against all of the other customers that we work with and try to make it better in ways that customers would be surprised by, so no derivative effects. And everything that we do is based off of customer consent and opt-in. So that's super important to understand. And we believe that that's kind of the future. And one of the reasons that brands are coming to us as a competitive differentiator is that we're treating each brand's data in a silo. And, you know, we like to say that if one of our customers, end users or customers were to look inside of what data that brand had about them in Imperity, no one would be really very surprised because it's all consent based. So then when you talk about location, there's lots of ways to use location that's super, super relevant to consumers that I think that they do want. Two of the ways that I would sort of highlight, the first is around context. So if you think about location, there's lots of apps out there that can identify that you're, for example, near you know, a major coffee retailer, and we work with one. What's interesting is to figure out what the context of the messaging should be, and so by bringing together all of the customer's behavior, we can help inform what the content should be inside of the message that goes to a customer when they're near a retailer's store or when they've walked into an airport for an airline. The other way that we like to think about location-based data is around audiences. And so if you think about, you know, some of the major ways that, you know, we see especially retail playing in the location spaces around search and local search and helping people sort of on that last mile of the lower funnel of their retail journey. And so we can help get audiences into their various search bidding platforms so that they know who to bid on and can make bets on the right pricing strategy for those bids so that they're reaching the right people and investing the right amount to win when they're doing that local search bidding. So I think, again, if you come back, it all comes back to being personalized. And I think that in general, location-based marketing can have zero creepy factor as long as the messaging is relevant. I think the other problem with location without data from Imperity is a lot of brands resort to some really basic promotionality or very generic messaging. And so yep, the really good intentions of being localized kind of get eroded by the fact that the actual content of what gets delivered to the customer doesn't feel right to where the customer is in their journey. We really help to fix that.
Yeah. And you mentioned kind of competitive differentiation in your methods and the integrity of your data. I want to dive a little bit down on that because, you know, we hear lots of companies that talk a big game when it comes to, you know, not just location, but just panning back to the overall science of customer data management or data that assists kind of marketing and customer service in any way. So to kind of synthesize and, like, you know, close the loop on everything we've discussed so far, how would you summarize that you guys are kind of most differentiated versus others that do customer data management?
Absolutely. So in the customer data management space, there are so many players that have called themselves a customer data platform because the space is hot. And that's not how they started. So we're the only customer data platform that was purpose-built to solve the identity problem. Mm. We're working sort of in a space where we're seeing a lot of other players that were originally a tag management platform or an email platform or a personalization sort of engine who have started calling themselves customer data platforms. And they may have sort of crude ways of using email to match against identity and try to bring together some data sets because they kind of had to in their business. And what we're finding is that because we're so good at the identity problem and because there's these other players out there who are actually pretty great at what they were built to do, be a tag manager and a really good one, or be a personalization engine, we're finding actually that we're ending up partnering more often than competing.
Now, so we're going to switch gears a little bit and to kind of segue into our lightning round. So what's something about you that few people know about?
I used to be a middle school English teacher in Japan.
Ah, that's cool. We have not heard that answer yet. So what's a profession you'd want to have if you weren't doing what you do now? Airline pilot?
You know, it's funny. I would say urban planning. There's such an opportunity to create better, more diverse, more affordable cities. And I think that we're blanding our cities. And I think tech, by the way, is a part of the problem and can be part of the solution. And I would totally love to dedicate time to that space if I had sort of room for new energies.
Yeah. Now, speaking of tech, what is like a company or tech startup, whether it's one now or like kind of in the annals of history of tech, that you think would be most exciting to be kind of like a part of at that like early stage, like, you know, the like meeting of Woz and Jobs at the Homebrew Computer Club or like the HP Garage or, you know, anything like that or current?
You know, it's funny because Imperity is kind of a startup and this has ended up being just really incredible. So my instinct is to say Imperity, but the other side, like at 4 a.m. during feedings, I have to say there's so much room for cool innovation in the baby space that I actually think that there's room to innovate there. And I could imagine putting some thinking into how we can help make being, you know, parenting a little easier.
Yeah, absolutely. That's interesting. So what's your favorite tech product or app that you use as a consumer?
So right now, I think that my favorite one, again, you know, I'm stuck in the baby thing because that's half my life right now. But we're using this app called the Owl. I don't know if you've heard of this. It's a sock that goes on your baby's foot and it tracks their heart rate and oxygen rate. And it's supposed to be for the baby, you know, during the sort of early years when there's a risk of sudden infant death syndrome. Sure. But it's kind of letting us sleep a lot better because we're not waking up every hour to see if she's breathing. And it's kind of changed our lives.
Yeah, it's like, well, it's like the quantified self movement, but the quantified baby.
Mm-hmm.
So who is someone from the business world that you admire most and why?
You know, there's a woman, her name is Carol Hamilton. She was the president of the luxury division at L'Oreal. And she's a super inspiring leader. And I look up to her in a lot of ways because she's an American that worked her way up to the top of a French company that was very French, very sort of bougie, white male, top-down organization.
Sure.
Punched her way through it, and didn't just punch her way through it, but ended up becoming the largest luxury beauty portfolio in the world, kind of in her path. And the quote that she gave me that I love to share with others of how to succeed in an environment like that is to just keep going until physically restrained.
Yeah. I like that. So what's a superhero power that you would most want to have?
I mean, right now, I'll go for the Obamas. Love to have, you know, Michelle Obama's book starts with her having a grilled cheese in her backyard. I'd love to make another one with her and hang out.
I like that. That's good. So what are some passions or hobbies outside of work that help you kind of mentally unplug? You mentioned kind of outdoor stuff.
Yeah, totally. So we're huge hikers. I can't wait to can't wait to get the backpack where you can stick your baby in the back of it and get up into the mountains this summer. The hiking around Seattle is just incredible. We were in New Zealand a couple years ago, and I actually think that this rivals a lot of what we saw in New Zealand.
Huh, that says a lot. That's great. Now, last question. What are some of your personal goals for 2019?
Oh my gosh, figuring out a way to balance, you know, time is such a zero sum game, and figuring out how to balance being an awesome father and continuing to help Imperity to build out in this really incredible moment so that we keep executing at, you know, bigger and bigger scale. I mean, those are my two goals. If I can pull both of those things off, be a good dad and be awesome here and deliver tons of value to customers, I'm gonna sleep well.
Nice. So that's actually a great place to end it. So that's all the time we have. I want to thank you, Matthew, for spending time with us.
Thank you so much. Really a pleasure.
Yeah, that was fun. And thank you all for listening, and stay tuned for future episodes of Heard on the Street. You can find us on streetfightmag.com, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, and also stay tuned for lots more writings and multimedia from Street Fight. So this has been Heard on the Street. I'm Mike Boland. Thanks for listening.